Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2020. I should first say sorry about the previous stream, which didn't happen. I don't know why that was, some kind of confusion with the scheduling. I thought it was all straightforward, but in the end, E. Michael Jones didn't show up. I don't know why. Hopefully we'll be able to reschedule. But this is the final one of the night now. And this is with, hold on a second. And this is with Robin Riley. Previously, the mother formerly known as CC Bucko and Critical Condition.
Yes.
So those were names that I always find quite fun and amusing. But she's now going by Robin Riley. So and obviously she's been on for the last 3 years running. I think it was 2017.
Yes,
so yeah. So this is the fourth time, and we're going to catch up with the events of her life in this year. So that should be quite fun. Hold on a second. I'll just find out what the URL is for this so that I can share it. And there it is. And I'll paste it in here. Hold on a second. There we go. Excellent.
Okay, I'll just share it on my Twitter real quick too before we start.
Okay. Oh, someone says, I followed Robin since her Critical Condition days.
Wow, an OG follower. I always find it interesting when people, they remember like the septum ring, and they remember like really niche things from way back in the day when I was in a really rough state, and they've stuck with me all this time. I really appreciate those people.
yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And I still get comments about, you know, traffic cones and things from my first year and the first 2 years, and it's like, oh my gosh, you remember that? Just little, you know, videos here and there. It's quite funny.
The internet never forgets.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's go ahead and so last year I think you had just got married.
I think I was 6 months pregnant as well when I was on last year.
Yeah, that would make sense. So. Now that I think of the timeline. So I guess that brings us to this year. What has changed this year? It's quite predictable, really, when you think about it, but go ahead.
So I had my first child. I had a little boy in March. His name is Magnus, and he's very hard work. He's a challenging baby, but he's like the love of my life. He's the best baby ever. And unfortunately, because being a mom is like a really demanding job, and it's my priority job now, my content has kind of taken a bit of a backseat. It was still kind of trickling out during the newborn phase, because he would have these lovely 3 hour long naps in the middle of the day and I could stream with him right next to me. That doesn't really happen anymore. So my content has slowed down, but it's also changed a little bit as well. My focus has gone a little bit more towards like lifestyle and mom stuff, just because that's what I'm doing. And it's really hard to keep track of the news cycle when, you know, you can barely run a brush through your hair.
Do you find that your interest in the news cycle is, you know, eroded?
Yes.
Or right.
Okay. Yeah, it definitely has.
Talk about that. It may be an interesting thing to compare yourself with, you know, in your mid or late 20s when this was, when you were into this stuff. Yeah. and how it's, what is your perspective on that kind of thing now?
Well, I guess, you know, it was almost like a bit of an obsession for me in my mid to late 20s. And I went through that sort of that red pill, like changing, going from a sort of a left-wing person to a right-wing person. And once that transformation was complete, and I became the person that I now am, there was less of a need and an urge for me to be scouring the internet for answers, because I wasn't confused anymore, right? I kind of figured it out, and now I was living what it was that I believe is truth, right? Which is that family is important, and just building my life offline. Like, that's always kind of been my goal. The Jordan Peterson thing that kind of is recurrent in our conversations was that, you know, you're not supposed to criticize the world until you've got your life figured out. So I've always been trying to prioritize my life more than the content stuff. It's kind of like inevitable when you get pregnant and, you know, you're transforming into another person again, that womanly things that like they're not really super political, right? I would much rather sit down and watch a mom fold her laundry now than, you know, a really cerebral debate about whatever, like some ideological concept. And that's just the way it is. You know, also, I don't really have the mental capacity. I don't have the memory recall for these like very intense intellectual things that I used to be interested in. So I think it's just a natural thing that's happened, to be honest. But as I've moved away from the political stuff, my content has become more like mom and like normie and just like easy content, cooking and around the house stuff, doing my laundry, and people like that. And that's sort of the community that I'm in now.
I see. So how would you compare your mindset now with that of, the one that you were in, say, 2 years ago? I mean, when you think of her in the third person, how does she come? What do you think of her? How do you see her?
Well, I feel kind of proud of her, actually, to be honest, because when I think back to the absolute state that I was in and how confused I really was, and how it really could have not worked out, I'm really proud of myself for persevering and having the courage to take the risks necessary and to make the decisions that I had to make to get me to this point, because it really wasn't easy.
Why wasn't it easy?
Well, because I had to like destroy myself in a way. The person that I was full of degenerate impulses, right? I was sort of a slave to my impulses. I was smoking. I was under eating. I was used to partying and, you know, spending my money on frivolous things and having zero direction in my life. And it's really hard to change quickly. To like someone who is responsible and has a future orientation and who isn't smoking every day. I mean, you know it yourself, like these sort of habits, once you've been doing them for a really long time, it's extremely difficult and even painful to give them up. And once I started to do that, and I started to like sort of realize, oh, I'm getting stronger. Oh, I can do this. Maybe it's okay. I got better, but things about my old life kept sort of peeling off as I became this person. And part of that was losing people, which was probably the most painful part of the end of me letting go of that old life and becoming who I now am. It was sort of saying goodbye to people who had been my best friends, like nearly like siblings to me for over 10 years. And I made a video about it. I think it was in the beginning of last year. And yeah, that was something that was really, really tough. But once I said goodbye to those people, which was really tough, it was like nothing was holding me back anymore. And I was just, you know, on the right course, finally, nothing holding me back.
Right. I'm trying to think if you could think of, what you would say to a woman of, you know, who was in the position you were in 4 years ago, what would you tell her now?
I would say that you should have a sense of urgency about turning your life around, because I mean, there's a lot of reasons why the closer you creep to your mid-30s, the harder it is to sort out family life. There are like biological, fertility-related reasons for that. There are sort of like sexual market value reasons for that. There are just from common sense things where it's like the older you get, the harder it is to meet new people, just like in general. It's harder to sort of make new connections, because they kind of already have their networks established by the time they're that age. So if you're still looking, you kind of might be the left out a little bit. So there should be a sense of urgency, but to not despair, because there's no reason to despair. there's a lot of people in my age bracket, which is like, you know, a mid to late millennial age, who have found themselves in a similar situation. People who've kind of like woken up out of a stupor, realized.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Right? I mean, sorry to interrupt, but yeah, absolutely. I mean, the millennial generation, and I don't know if it's any better for the Zoomers, but I do see the millennial generation as one that is just royally screwed by the culture that we imbibed, if not as children, then definitely as teenagers. I think, when I was a child, it was still pretty traditional. I mean, most families were still together. There was still an assumption that, you know, that you'd grow up and have kids one day. But by my teen years, adolescence, that was kind of out the window in the late 90s.
Yeah, that's very true. So there, while it can feel like, you know, you have to build Rome in a day, when, you know, you're kind of realizing where you've gone wrong, and then you have to like change a direction like on a dime, that's really, it's alarming. It's kind of, it makes you feel a little anxious, but like, don't despair, because there's a lot of people out there like you. There's a lot of people who are returning to church, who are online, you know, Twitter. I see people who are like Twitter couples. I met my husband on Twitter. Twitter couples, like Twitter is a dating website, let's be honest. that's what it is. There are lots of people who are coming together through lots of really interesting ways. And, you know, starting lives together. So like, there's no reason to despair. You may have to, you know, go fishing a little bit and, take a chance on someone who might be a little broken, just like you. You know, we don't have the, pleasure of picking someone who's perfect for us necessarily. If we're starting later in life, you might have to pick a man who has potential, right? And that you can grow with. But yeah, like don't despair. There's still hope, and you, as long as you're like not actually going through menopause, you can still have a baby.
You said something just in passing that's quite interesting. You said transitioning to being a future oriented person, because, and I know that you don't bill yourself as, you know, Mrs. Trad Wife.
No, not at all.
You're quite careful of that label. Mm-hmm. But you are clearly embracing or have embraced a traditional lifestyle. And what a lot of people think about that, like traditional, is it means being tied to the past in a certain way, or being stuck in the past. Like, this is how a liberal would lampoon it. Yeah. So it's interesting to hear, you say actually it's about being oriented towards the future. Because I think that actually the inverse is actually true here. It's the liberal who is nostalgic probably for their own childhood and doesn't want to grow up. I know I still struggle with that. I mean, I actually went home a few weeks ago, and it was just intense. You know, this feeling of like seeing these places I used to know. And, but anyway, it's still definitely there. Anyway, I think that the liberal is in a sense, I don't want to be too unfair on them, but I think that in a sense it is about elongating childhood and adolescence into your 20s and 30s and 40s instead of growing up. And it is a thing. Meantime, as I've said, the traditionalist is actually someone who is thinking about the long term, about the future, including beyond their lifespan. Would you say anything about that?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right about that. And to add to your point, I think not only are liberals kind of trapped in sort of nostalgia, they've totally fallen for this like live in the moment thing, right? It's all about momentary pleasure, right? Sort of new age philosophy of all there is now. Time isn't linear. You can just like stay in the one eternal now and everything will be fine. Like I did that and it got me nowhere, not surprisingly. It is a really good point that you make about how the traditionalist has a future orientation, because why else would we make traditions if not for our great grandchildren to participate in them, right? And to instill those things in our children so that they can pass them on. Being future oriented is really tough. It's something that I still struggle with, because even though I am, trying to live a more traditional lifestyle, I'm still living in the modern world, first of all, right? And we don't live in a traditional society. So it's kind of impossible to live as a trad person in a modern society. And that's one of the reasons why I don't call myself trad. But also, I lived way more of my life as a modern person with no conception or value on the trad lifestyle, except for maybe my childhood by osmosis through my parents. So I'm still recovering from that. I still have habits that I have to break all of the time and try to override all of the time so that I don't slip back into that.
Yeah. I think you're probably never an ex-millennial. You're always a recovering millennial.
Exactly.
I mean, it is a thing. As I said, it is difficult to move on. I think in a way that's probably something that parenting helps with, because it just, you kind of have to, it just forces you to do it, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
You see it yourself. You know what the movement is like. There are many people, and again, I don't exclude myself from this, who struggle to let go of this stuff and just do what our parents did. I think this is one of the ways in which liberalism and progressivism maintain their hold on people. They say that, well, to do that kind of stuff, to settle down, is to let go of all of the possibilities, all of the things that you could be. Actually, Greg Johnson did a very good essay about this, and I forgot what it was titled, but we talked about it, he and I, in a stream on Countercurrents, where he said that in order to actually achieve anything in life, you have to give up on many potentials in order to do that one thing.
Yes.
Or that small number of things. And that does mean letting go of 1,000 things that you could otherwise do. And I think this is something that people really are allergic to doing. And I don't know, I think somehow the culture sort of encourages that attitude. As you say, just live in the moment and don't think about the future. Yeah. And then, of course, with that as well is this thing about youth. I mean, it's terrible because, again, and you'll know this, you'll have felt this yourself, you realize you are getting older. In every way, and it just happens for men as well. You know, you can see it visibly, you can feel it physically, and you're aware of it. And like, there are people who are a lot younger than you now, but they're adults. You know, that kind of thing. It's kind of scary. But again, part of our culture is that it creates this delusion that you can remain 18 forever or 21 forever. And I think this is something that our ancestors were acutely aware of as a complete and utter lie.
Absolutely. And I think that this whole thing that you were talking about with regard to the endless possibilities, and you don't want to settle down on one sort of lifestyle because of that, that I think also translates into how we select our mates, right? Like there's the endless possibility of people you can meet on Tinder and all these different sort of social media apps and the internet. It makes it so that even if you are tied down with someone, there's always the availability of you to be looking, right? And to sort of still be sort of looking at the menu, but not ordering is an Irish saying that I makes me think of that kind of mindset.
Yeah. I can imagine. I'm actually very glad that I've never been on Tinder or any of these.
Same. I've never been on. I'm so proud of that.
Somehow, it's one of the vices that I've managed to forgo completely. I don't know how that and alcohol. Actually, that reminds me. This might be a good stream to talk about this in. Mm-hmm. I haven't said this yet, but I gave up smoking.
Wow.
And, I'm now.
Congratulations.
I'm vaping, but I've said this, but I think I haven't told the story of how it happened, and I think you might be the one to tell this to.
Please do.
Because it is quite an interesting story. There was a period of extreme stress earlier this year for me, and at the height of that, there was a week of stress, and then on the Friday morning, I was up all night, it was having to contact lots of people, and then I went to bed at about 5 in the morning. And then I was lying in bed, and there's this, the sun was just coming up, and it cast this ray of light into the room. And I'd been smoking very heavily that week, so the room was full of smoke. And this ray of light was very thick. It was very bright, and I'd never seen it before. I'd never seen been up at all hours in this room for 2.5 years, and I'd never seen this. And there it was, this ray of light coming in, and like a thick bar. And I remember thinking, if this was in a film, this would be a harbinger, that this would be a sign that divine intervention was about to occur in some way. So yes. That would be the cliche. And then I couldn't get to sleep. So I got up and came over here and I realized that I didn't have any cigarettes left. I'd smoked them all. So I thought, okay, I've got to go down and get some cigarettes. Got to buy some. And there are two shops near me that are open 24/7, two of them. And one on that side, one on that side. And I've lived here for 2 years and not once have both of those shops been closed. On occasion, one of them has been closed, but the other one's been open. Usually, almost all the time, both of them have been open. So I went downstairs to went out to buy a pack of cigarettes. I went to the first shop and it was closed. And then you can see where this is going. And then I went to the other shop and it was closed as well. And that's the only time that's ever happened. And but the light was on inside it in the second shop. So I thought, well, the guy's probably about to open, so I'll just wait. So I knocked on the door so that he would know that there was someone outside waiting. And then I stood there waiting. And then I thought, if I continue standing here waiting, eventually the guy's going to come and open the door and I'll go in, buy some cigarettes, and then I'll leave and I'll smoke them. On the other hand, if I just walk away, none of that will happen. And then I thought, well, okay, how long should I stand here contemplating this decision? And then I thought, don't contemplate it at all. Just walk away. Just leave right now. Go. And then I just did. I just did. I just walked away.
That's amazing. And you never, yeah. You haven't spoke since?
No. That's actually the end of the story. I was walking back and to my house and I thought, am I actually doing this? I mean, I've been smoking for a long time. Let's just say I had been smoking for a very long time. And I thought, am I actually serious about this? And basically the end of it is I haven't had a single craving. Not once.
Wow.
And my thinking at the time was there was that ray of light coming into the room.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm not religious, but if that was God, then if I don't act on it, if I reject this help from God, then that's extremely uncouth of me. It's extremely rude of me. It's extremely ungrateful. So I can't afford to take that risk. Therefore, I have to act as if it is God. I have no choice. I have to.
Yes.
And that was it.
Wow.
And I've never had a single craving. And that's 7 months, well, nearly 8 months ago now. And I've never had a single cigarette.
Wow. Well, I am religious. And I'm going to tell you, it's not cliche to think that that's divine intervention. I don't know what else you could call that.
And I don't know what else. Now, I've just taken a thing from the vape. I should say but it's interesting though, because for the first 5 days, I didn't even do this. And again, I didn't ever need to, didn't ever want to, but then I took it and I thought, well, yeah, all right. And I can easily go, it's completely different from smoking. I can easily go a day or whatever without doing this. And I don't even think about it. And then I'll see it over there and I'll think, oh yeah, there's that. It's not like smoking where you're thinking, I want to be smoking a cigarette right now.
Always, yeah.
It's just completely a completely different type of thing, and not
well.
Really,
that's fantastic news. I'm really happy to hear that you kicked that habit. That's awesome because I quit smoking. Cool. I smoked for 7 years, I think, and I quit in 2018, and it was really tough for me. It was really tough. It was like 3 solid months of just really not being happy about it and always wanting a cigarette. And if I ever saw someone smoking a cigarette, I'd be jealous. And slowly, slowly, gradually, it became more of something that I found disgusting, which is great. So now I don't crave it. And when I smell it, I kind of think, ugh, that's so gross. I can't believe I used to do that. But it was hard in the beginning for me.
It is weird how your perception of it changes. And you actually, don't like it anymore. It's amazing, really, because I never realized how it smells to other people. I think after the first 24 hours, I thought, bloody hell, I've gone 24 hours now. And then after the first 3 days, it was, I've done 3 days. How the fuck is that? How am I managing this? Because it was always the thing, like, I wanted to get fit. I wanted to stop drinking Coke. I wanted to do these various things. But I thought the thing that's going to be the most difficult is giving up smoking.
Yes.
But it wasn't. It was effortless, literally effortless. And wow. There you go. That's the story.
Well, that's made my night. I think that's fantastic news. Good for you.
Oh, thank you very much. It's very strange. One of those things. So, I wanted to bring that up because obviously I thought you would have a perspective on it. But anyway, let's bring it back to more pertinent matters. Do you have anything to say about 2020 and the events of this year? And obviously I know you're not completely attached to it
I'm not keeping up with the news, right? Like I'm not like watching the news and like up on current events the way that I was, but there are certain like hot button issues which enrage me probably even more now that I'm a mom than before. Things that are going on in the school system with regard to like the LGBT community and sex ed, like that drives me crazy. And there's this sort of creeping it's becoming more and more intense, at least here in Canada. And that anything that really is targeting children, it really upsets me. I mean, of course. The Black Lives Matter riots was something that really, really upset me. And there was something that I noticed in the mom community that I'm in, especially on Instagram, because that community is apolitical. Women, they go out of their way to not touch politics whatsoever, because a lot of the women in the mom community, sort of normie sphere mom community, they want to cast a wide net. They're trying to make a living, right? They don't want to turn people off, liberal or conservative. They want to sort of build a community of women just on the basis of all being moms. So it was kind of alarming to me when the Black Lives Matter sort of propaganda scheme rolled out, and they had that it was like your silence is violence. That was the one of the little tags that was floating around, and then there was also muted and silent, something like this. And so all of the women put a big black square on their Instagram, and then everyone was linking how to donate to Black Lives Matter charities. And women that I knew for sure these are right wing women. Some, and you would be surprised. There are women with like millions of followers who are as right wing as me and you, but you would never know by watching their content. And they do that intentionally, right? Those women felt like they had no choice but participate in this sort of everyone sort of posturing, showing that, oh, I'm not one of these bad guys, right? I'm the good guy, which is how Black Lives Matter were. They were showing themselves. And there were a lot of moms that were speaking behind the scenes, and they were kind of like, I don't want to do this. I feel like I'm being intimidated into participating in this. This isn't what I believe, but if I don't, my livelihood's going to be taken. Because you could see there was one mom in particular. She posted the black square, and instead of posting Black Lives Matter donation links, she just put the Lord's Prayer, and her comments were absolutely savage. People were like, you're a racist. You didn't do what you're supposed to do. You're still making this about God and what you think. This is supposed to be about black people, blah, blah, blah. And ironically, what ended up happening is that a lot of these moms were actually, it was a bit of a wake-up call, I think, for them. And there have been several moms in this community who have big normie followings who have become more explicitly right-wing. It's almost like a pendulum swung with their content, and they're being more open about who they really are, because I think they saw what this sort of mob mentality and cancel culture on the left and Black Lives Matter were doing. And that was something that I found very, very interesting at the beginning of the year. And of course, like I was on Instagram saying like, Black Lives Matter is a terrorist organization. Like, don't fall for it. I was freaking out. I was so upset. But it was very interesting to witness.
Calling everyone out.
No, I didn't want to do that. Like, that's the sort of weird thing about Instagram as well. Like, I've joked about this online that I kind of have like social media multiple, what is it called? Dissociative identity disorder, where like Twitter is where I talk about politics. Instagram is where I talk about mom stuff. And like YouTube is kind of a hybrid of those things. But like, I try not to put politics onto Instagram, but there was no way to avoid it. It was like, you know, you were scrolling through your feed and everyone was participating in the exact same way. It was really troubling to watch. And I found it interesting.
Well, that's why I had to leave normie Facebook. I had to just abandon my normie Facebook account because I had all these friends that, you know, from school and stuff. And I, like, politics kept coming up. I was trying not to rock the boat by talking about politics, but it kept bloody well coming up. And you think, well, okay, do I say something or not? And sometimes I would, and I did lose quite a few friends from doing that kind of thing. But eventually I just abandoned that account because it's just not worth the trouble on there anyway. But yeah, I can see with the, obviously Instagram's a different thing. So do you think that will have lasting effects?
I do. I do. I definitely do. Because the whole thing about being this sort of lifestyle blogger, right, as a mom, was that you didn't want to touch, you don't want to talk about politics, right? That you're creating like an aesthetic little escape from all of that. And with the your silence is violence thing, it forced women to participate in politics that they don't agree with. And not only that they don't agree with, but a lot of them didn't even understand what it was. They'd never heard of any of these things before. Like some of them had never heard of the topics of white privilege or whatever it is that Black Lives Matter is talking about nowadays. But I can't even recall, and I don't have the mental capacity to recall, but
have you heard of a guy called George Floyd?
Oh, yes.
That's what they're talking
about.
Is he
not the man of the year?
Yeah. That's what, well, yeah, they've been talking about that. Then it was the statues, and I can't even remember what they're going on about now. But yeah, it's all because of that thing that happened, I think, in May, June. So that's what triggered it all, just in case you don't know that.
Yes, and I think there are a lot of women that were very resentful of feeling like kind of peer pressured, this kind of like high school mentality peer pressure to participate in a political campaign that not only did they not understand, but that they didn't agree with. And if they didn't agree with it, their livelihoods were going to be attacked. So I do think it has had long lasting effects.
Well, I hope that they can survive because, as you say, their livelihoods will still be attacked in future.
Yes, absolutely. It's only a matter of time before something like this happens again.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think that was largely manufactured. I think they just decided, okay, this is the right time. We need a horror story. That one will do. It's just happened. So we'll use that. And that was it. I think it was completely manufactured. I mean, similar things happen and there's no big fuss about it. So there was a reason why they chose that one. And I think that the powers that be wanted it to happen. So I think it will absolutely happen again. I mean, there were some theories. I think Edward Dutton had one that to do with a disaster, a threat of death, COVID-19, followed by a religious revival, BLM, and take the knee and all that. I don't know if I buy that theory, but definitely they wanted it at that time for some reason or other. I think because, you know, everyone was cooped up indoors, and then suddenly this happened, and it was suddenly everyone's allowed to go out now and go to the demos. It's completely surreal. I mean, really, what a year.
Yeah.
When you think about it, 2019 was weird enough, but this has just been incredible.
Yeah, it's been a weird time to like have a baby as well. Like I had my baby 3 days before the entire world went into lockdown. And I had a home birth, which I'm very proud of. And I have talked about my home birth great extent online. A lot of people probably aren't interested in it, but in the mom community, our birth stories are really important to us. And
of course,
it was kind of a really welcome distraction, you know, because I would have been home anyway for 2.5-3 months, right? Probably not leaving the house anyway. Your postpartum period, you're kind of supposed to be a shut-in. You're supposed to be healing. You're supposed to be bonding with your baby, learning to breastfeed, and getting the support of other people. And unfortunately, the really tough thing about all of this has been that the only person in my family who has met my son is my mom. And actually my brother has met my son as well, but my son has great grandparents, and that is one of the coolest things in the whole world to me. I'm just so happy that, you know, they're still around and that they will get to meet him eventually. But, you know, he's going to be a year old in a few months, like, and they've missed this entire first year, and that's absolutely heartbreaking, because it was like my dream to put my baby into his great grandparents' arms, and that's been taken from me.
I'm so sorry, but as you say, it will happen in a few months. I mean, you've got to hold on to that, because otherwise, it's, you know, you could get bitter. Yeah. It's a nasty thing. And there are other manifestations of this same thing. You know, I have a relative who's in a care home now, and I went up to Scotland to visit, and I had to stay 2 meters away, had to keep the mask on. I don't think she even knew who I was. Mm. And, other people have similar things like, oh, no, I couldn't cuddle her, couldn't touch her, nothing. It's just so bizarre and unnatural, this phase, this era that we're going through now. And that's why I really hope that it's not the way of the future. I really hope that one way or another it does end. I mean, I think everyone does. I think it's cruel and sadistic, you know, when they talk about this as the new normal, when everyone, yeah, it's perfectly obvious that this simply is not a big, like, the virus is simply not very deadly, very serious. It's that's quite clear. I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Yeah, I think it's fairly obvious that it was massively overblown by our governments. You know, the severity of the COVID-19 virus, the coronavirus, that's what you're supposed to call it, COVID-19. I think that there was probably a lot of propaganda coming out of China in the beginning. Like, remember when people were like dropping dead in the street, and there was like all this hysteria of like, what is this going to be like? And we were looking at Italy and everyone was in shock. But, you know, now in retrospect, you look at Sweden didn't have any lockdowns and they're doing just fine. So what's weird about the coronavirus is that, like, it's really hard to like put your finger on it, like what it, and say what it exactly is. But I think with a fair degree of certainty, we can say that it's not as bad as it was made out to be. And the fact that things like, you know, cancer treatments are being postponed, surgeries are being postponed, prenatal care and fertility treatments have been like severely compromised. But of course, we have abortion services that are still running as normal, right? It's
amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's really messed up.
Well, all right. Shall we leave it at that, or would you like to go on a wee bit longer? I'm just conscious that your son is kindly staying quiet.
If you have another topic that you'd like to discuss, we can go a little bit longer. He seems to be happy with his dad right now.
Well, all right then. How about probably no many thoughts on the US election, I'm guessing.
So like at first I was like really into it, and I was like, yeah, Trump's going to win, Trump won. And then it was just like week one went by and week two went by. And first of all, I am a Canadian. So like, I'm not as invested in the election as an American would be, even though I have American relatives and it would affect them what's going to happen. But also, like, I think that what has happened is kind of like it was designed to make you more and more and more apathetic as time went on. How can you keep that same sort of like fervor and like excitement for months now? And the way that Trump has handled it is kind of just gotten more and more embarrassing. I feel like it almost would have been better if he had, I don't know. I don't want to say anything. I'm not a political analyst, and I don't want to upset any American people out there who are still, you know, holding on to hope, and, you know, they're like, no black pills, he's gonna win, he won. Like, I don't want to like rain on your parade or anything, but for me, I couldn't keep up with it. And, you know, the world's gonna be, it seems like it's gonna be kind of a bad place to be in for a little while longer, regardless of who's the president. And yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, you can understand people caring about this.
Of course, yes.
Obviously. And I do agree with you, though, that whoever ends up winning this, it's not going to be pretty.
No, it's not. It's definitely not.
There's too much.
I would like to see Trump win, but like, I just don't think it's going to happen. I've kind of lost hope, I think.
So you're off the Trump train.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I was before anyways. You know, there were a lot of things that Trump did throughout his presidency that made me kind of apathetic to him as a president, right? Like, I agree that the way that he revived America was awesome. That was great. And I think that he sort of, he has this sort of America first ethos that has revived nationalism and populism around the world. Awesome. I'm like totally on board with that. I think that that's probably one of the greatest long-lasting effects of his presidency. But there were a lot of things that he did that sort of undermined America first. He didn't follow through on a lot of his campaign promises, like the wall and stuff. So, you know, he just kind of seemed like a puppet at the end of the day, you know, in the final year of his presidency. So, I mean, I was rooting for Trump because, I mean, of course, you're going to root for Trump against a Biden-Harris presidency. But like, it was kind of like you're picking the lesser of two evils. It still kind of seems like a theater to me more than anything. At least in the beginning, it seemed like, oh, this outsider, this wrecking ball is coming in to sort of destroy the system. Awesome. Like, let's cheer him on. Let's root for him to do that. And then as time went on, it became more and more obvious that he was just another part of the establishment under a different name, you know, with a different sort of persona. So I don't know.
He was definitely dominated by the establishment. Yeah. If he wasn't part of it, he was certainly dominated by it. And that's, you know, I talked about this with Black Pilled a couple of nights ago, which is an interesting stream. But yeah, so okay, let's wrap it up with any final thoughts about where your life is now, because this is what we do every year. Where your life is now compared to this time last year?
Well, I mean, I'm a mom now, so I got what I wanted, which was something. We were talking about me having a family and starting my family, I think, back in 2017. So it's been a long time coming to this point and this moment, and now I'm living it. And it's simultaneously like the hardest and the most fun thing in the whole world. I'm really grateful that I'm here, and I hope that my content can now be like a beacon of light that, yeah, you can do it. I've done it. And, you know, just sort of be positive as opposed to focusing so much on the political stuff all the time.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you have any regrets?
Any regrets? Maybe moving to Northern Canada. I almost wish that I had stayed in Belgium. I wanted to come home because I wanted to like have my baby in my home country. But if I had known that I was going to be coming into like a COVID-19 Canada, I probably would have stayed where I was. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure. But yeah, well, no regrets other than that.
And your child would be a Belgian.
Yeah, actually, I don't like the sound of that either. I don't
know. It's too different, isn't it? All right. I mean, it does remind me of a joke that I once made. I said to someone that there's no such thing as Belgian identity. You can't be a Belgian unless you're a waffle. Anyway, on that note, let's end it. So, well, I hope you come on again next year. It's been really nice to catch up with everything this year.
Yes, thank you for having me. Have a merry Christmas, and hope everyone has a merry Christmas out there.
Okay, and merry Christmas and happy new year to you as well, Robin Riley. Thank you for taking part in Millennial 2020.
Awesome. See you next year.
All right. See you later. Everyone else, I will be back tomorrow night with Garode Murphy. and then Crypto for Nationalists. We'll be talking about Bitcoin, then Closington, and then Apollonian Germ. So that should be another quite informative and entertaining evening. All right, I'll see you all later. Thank you again, Robin, and good night for now.